and welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. Today is April 22nd. It is 3 o'clock in the San Francisco Bay Area, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and my guest is calling in from Australia, where it is 8 a.m. on Tuesday, April 23rd. Delighted to be with you today. You're listening to the Global Product Management Talk, which is at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. Please join us by calling in. I'm told that the best experience for listening live is to call into the show. The phone number is 323-927-2957. You're welcome to call in and speak with us as well. Our engineer, BZ Lewis, will screen your call and bring you in to talk with myself and Nick Koster. Today, we are talking about the gap between the business case and the agile development process. The agile business gap. But before we get there, I want to tell you that I'm Cindy F. Solomon. You can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon. And I am your host and producer. You can follow the tweets today at Prod Management Talk, PRODMGMTTALK, which is our website. It's also our hashtag. And if you search for Prod Management Talk, you'll find information about the archives of over 80 podcasts on various subject matter related to product excellence, product management, business process, methodology, including agile, lean, innovation, marketing, and experts discussing these issues. It's also available on iTunes, on Stitcher, on the Blog Talk Radio app, and also in the Android Google Play. Just search for PRODMGMTTALK to listen right on your smartphone. I want to thank our sponsors, the AIPMM, which is the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. Follow them on the web, www.aipmm.com. Follow their Twitter, at AIPMM. They're founded in 1998. They promote worldwide excellence in product management education, providing training, certification credentials, professional networking opportunities with members in over 65 countries. And they are also forwarding the Prod Box, the Product Management Body of Knowledge, and the Product Management Lifecycle Framework. Check it out. Thank you to Sprintly. Don't ask how it's going, watch how it's going with Sprint.ly. Check them out. Sprintly is project management software that brings in the entire corporation to the software development process by showing managers and non-engineers a top-level view of what the programmers are doing. Also follow at Joe Stump, who is the CEO founder of Sprintly, and find them on the web at sprint.ly. Thank you to brainmates.com, boosting people and product performance. Subscribe to their newsletter, read popular brain rants, learn about their consulting and mentoring approach to forward your product management career and methods at BrainMates. And SponSumo, which solves the headaches of managing conferences and other events, allowing you to focus on relationships and sales. Sign up for a trial account at SponSumo.com. Follow at Startup Product, the movement for product excellence through cross-discipline collaboration and holistic product perspective. There is a life cycle that every product, startup, idea, and project passes through to be realized. Focusing on where the product is in its life cycle enables a conversation that brings us all together on what will serve the product most to arrive ultimately at product excellence. StartupProduct.com. We are recording live from Studio 132 with BZ Lewis. That's at Studio 132. And the music is courtesy of Blame Sally. Blame Sally is performing live at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco on May 11th, 2013. They're on the web at www.blamesally.com. Okay. Thank you to our sponsors. Contact me, Cindy, at PRODMGMTTALK if you would like to sponsor. We are a top 10 Business Podcast on the Blog Talk Radio Network. This week, over the weekend, there were a few product events happening worldwide, which were very exciting. The biggest of which was taking place in Berlin, Germany. It was the Product Design Summit. The tweets are still happening at Pound BD Summit, and I captured the transcript of tweets. They had a graphic scribe. They were talking about it was put on by the developers of the business model Canvas. Steve Blank was there. Luke Homan was there of Innovation Games, and there were 9 or 10 other speakers. All of that content is available. You could follow the Storify, where I keep track of the archives of these kinds of events, at storify.com/prodmgmttalk. Also on Saturday, there were two product camps. One was in London, Product Camp London, and one was in Product Camp Portland, the Portlandia Product Camp. So tweets from those events and the content and how I capture the tweets is to just showcase everyone who had something to say. So there's not a lot of editing. Basically, you're reading what occurred in chronological order by tweets with a little added content, pictures, and whatever else. If there's content that I miss, just shoot me an email and I will add it into those Storifys. So today we are talking with Nick Koster, who is the co-founder of BrainMates. And let me tell you a bit about Nick. Hold on. Okay, Nick Koster. He is passionate about the benefits of putting the customer before the technology and building products and services that delight the buyer and the user. Nick has been developing and managing products for over 13 years with a range of different companies, including Telstra, Big Pond, Excite at Home, Optus, Westpac, and eBay, delivering internet service and telecommunications, online applications, and internet security products. In the process of this journey, he has developed a deep understanding of the way the different technologies fit together and is always amazed at the new and exciting ways that people use him. Use them. Follow him on Twitter at Nick Koster, and he is a co-founder of at BrainMates. By the way, the Global Product Management Talk was started with BrainMates. Gosh, over 2 years ago now, we started as a Twitter chat for product managers to discuss these issues. We soon discovered that it's very hard to talk about complex issues on Twitter, but we still maintain the Twitter feed. So I'm delighted to have Nick Koster with us coming in from Skype. Nick, are you still there?
I'm still here, Cindy. Thank you very much.
Awesome. So did I leave anything out?
I think you've covered us pretty well there. I think they've now been in business for nearly 10 years now, delivering products that customers love. And we've seen lots of different changes in the marketplace, and obviously one of them that has been impacting on both product development and product management in particular is the changes in agile development, which is, I guess, what we want to be talking about today.
Yes. I also want to shout out to Adrian, who is the other co-founder of BrainMates, who I chat with. He used to be a co-host on a regular basis. And also a shout-out to the listeners in the San Francisco Bay Area coming in from the Startup Product Talks meetup. And also welcome to our listeners on the phone. So let me just read the intro here. The best Agile practitioners and thought leaders state that products developed using Agile methods should be linked to the organizational strategies and objectives. In practice, however, Agile does not provide any guidance for product managers or business owners on how to make this link work. We call this the Agile business gap, which exists between the objectives set out in a business case and the effective formulation of prioritized user stories that feed into an Agile development process. So why don't we start there? Because I have had speakers on who have talked about agile marketing. They've talked about applying agile to the innovation process. But when they're talking about agile there, they're really talking about an approach. They're not talking about the development methodology. I mean, even just the other day, I saw a commercial, I think it was for Volkswagen, talking about how the cars are agile. So this term has been bandied about, but it's, and it means different things to different people. Certainly, if you're talking to business people, who doesn't want to be more agile, especially to increase efficiency? But that's how they are thinking about it, that it's either a change management or a business management orientation as opposed to a specific methodology, at least from the business perspective.
Well, I mean, I think that's a really good point to get things started. I mean, who wouldn't want to be more agile? It's a cool word. It's a cool way of thinking. But in the product development world, it means something special. It's kind of it's a special term which, having originated from a software development methodology, is now being used in some cases really well across other parts of the organization, and sometimes abused in other parts of the organization where it really shouldn't be applied in the same way that it's meant in the software development space.
Exactly. Why don't you tell us exactly how you come to apply Agile to the business case? And you know what? I think we even, please describe what you mean by the business case. Are you referring to the business model canvas of arriving at a business case?
Sure. Well, look, when a new idea comes into an organization, the ideas can come from anywhere. In fact, quite often there's so many ideas that could be looked at that the decision on which idea to choose can be quite overwhelming. And whether a business is creating a formal business case to make that decision or just informally making a decision based on what they think is the best thing to do, that decision-making process is really represented by a business case. In larger organizations, certainly the ones that we work with, the business case is a formal part of an overall organizational process. The business case will identify what the target markets are that an organization is striving to communicate with, what the product objectives are for the business, and what the product objectives are for the customer, and how it's going to create value for the business. And so it's the business case document or the business case output is essentially a decision-making tool for investing time, money, and resources in a particular idea or a number of grouped ideas. And so when we look at the agile process, most large organizations still have, even if their development teams have started working in an agile way, their organizational structures still have a traditional business case process that's signed off, that costs are assigned to it, and resources are assigned based on that business case, which doesn't necessarily work as well in with an agile methodology. But that's kind of the nature of the beast that a lot of organizations have to deal with.
So the business case is identified at the beginning in the planning stage to justify associating resources with this product development.
That's right. So of the many different possibilities that a business could choose from to do something to create business value for the customer and value for the business, the business case allows them to choose one or just a handful to proceed with at any given time. Once they have that business case, that business case should be essentially the guiding light for the rest of the project. And what we find, however, is that the amount of detail that you want to include in a business case at that early planning stage is nowhere near granular enough to start sort of just churning out user stories that feed into an agile development process. There's a gap between the output of the business case at the high level and the lower level detail that needs to be expressed to essentially inject user stories or customer requirements into activities that an agile development process can consume in relatively short sprint periods.
So I'm looking at the tweets. I'm just going to shout out and welcome Robert Kelly at rkelly976. He's joining the conversation. He leads the PM chat, the project management chat. Basically, you're talking about aligning Agile to the business KPIs, which are the key performance indicators.
Sorry, in a valiant effort to multitask, I was unable to unmute. That's absolutely right. So the and I think where I've seen some Agile projects go bad is where the Agile project has been so in the ditches with the details that it starts to lose sight of the high-level problem that it was trying to solve for the business and for the marketplace. It's a great way of discovering new possibilities and embracing change, but sometimes that change isn't appropriate to embrace relative to the original business case objectives. It results in scope creep or delivering something that the customer didn't ask for in the first place.
So is it the case of, in order to do a thorough and proper process, they're losing sight of what the intention of that process was initially?
That's been our observation, that in a small organization or a startup, Agile is fantastic because the people who hold the vision and the people who are delivering on the vision are usually within punching distance of each other. In a larger organization, they're going to be departments away from each other, and that becomes much harder to keep the overarching story of why you're developing something top of mind throughout the entire project.
Got it. So why don't we go into the first question, and I will post it, which is, what exactly, and you've been describing it, but what exactly is the Agile business gap?
Well, what we've observed organizations, and again, this applies mainly to larger organizations, the Agile business gap is essentially a methodology gap where between the high-level idea in an organization and its delivery into in an Agile process. What we find is that when a development team, primarily software developer, but not necessarily, decides to move into Agile methodologies, whether that's a Scrum methodology or a Kanban or whatever the particular implementation approach might be, there's an expectation that the rest of the business will suddenly start feeding them bite-sized user stories that they can start delivering against. And those user stories will be aligned automatically against the larger business goals. But the process outside of that Agile development process isn't clearly defined. And what we found are product managers or product owners who are faced with the daunting task of converting a business case output into effectively user stories or the inputs for an Agile development. And there's the Agile methodologies don't really embrace anything outside of the development process in their teachings, I guess.
Well, that's because they were developed by engineers for engineers from an engineering perspective. So the bottom line is, what is the problem? How do we solve it? How do we solve it the quickest, fastest way where we have autonomy for solving it and we're not slowed down by managers or other levels of the organization preventing us from creatively solving this?
That's right. So the software development teams have come up with a really great process for taking small chunks of information, and I think you mentioned the word problem. The developers should be taking small chunks of an overall business problem, developing a bit at a time, and then developing that into a larger overall product that can then be delivered to the market. And that might be a piece of the product that is being used for testing, or it might be an overall product which can be launched to the marketplace. But in either case, there's an expectation that business is able to feed them small chunks of the problem rather than the whole problem in one go, which is how it's kind of presented in a business case. So this gap is where it's really a process of scaling down a large problem into a series of much smaller ones before the solution design is performed as part of the Agile development process.
Gosh. So So it's really an issue, though. It's like, how do you determine, in scaling down that large problem, how do you prioritize which chunks should be dealt with first?
Well, this is essentially the approach that we've sort of been exploring. And it's a way of kind of embracing the agile principles beyond the development process. So I might just talk briefly about some of those agile principles before I talk about the how, because they kind of frame the thinking approach. The agile principles that I think deliver the most value for product managers are firstly, the first one is time boxing. So there's a limited amount of time that you have to perform any particular task, and that time is fixed and should be aligned with the development process. So, for example, Agile recommends, or Scrum in particular, recommends iteration cycles or sprints of 2 to 4 weeks. Anything longer than that starts to become a little bit unmanageable in terms of getting product or getting functionality delivered. So, with that time box, the product manager now needs to think, what do I need to get done, and what can I get done within a 2 to 4 week period? And that completely changes the way the product manager thinks about things. The second aspect of Agile is iterations. And so the idea of accepting that within the given time box, you won't get everything done, and you may not even get it done correctly, but you will get some output at each stage. The idea of the iteration then is that because we have multiple iterations, we actually have a number of different attempts to get closer and closer to achieving our business goals. So the combination of time boxing, which is delivering something within a short period of time, and iterations, allows us to incrementally move closer and closer to a goal without having to be right first time.
Is this what is being called continuous delivery?
Not quite. And the reason why it's not quite continuous delivery is that to me that particular term applies more to the way the organization is delivering products to market. And the experience I've had is that while that might be an end goal, most the organizations we've been talking to are still using Agile as a project implementation rather than a continuous delivery of product to the marketplace. Without wanting to get too off topic, one of the key pain points is actually the business funding models. So in a continuous delivery environment, you're essentially using operational expenditure to continually feed the development cycle. Whereas in sort of project initiated activities, you're using capital expenditure to essentially get the finance teams to sign off on your project, release funding, and then move forward. And that really doesn't work as well in an agile process. Yet that's still the environment that many of these organizations are bound by. So when we move to an agile state, we're kind of trying to change as little as possible while still getting the best benefits.
So going back to you said before, to move to 2 to 4 week time boxes, which is not how product managers are used to operating. So you're just suggesting that just very shortened roadmaps.
Well, it's both roadmaps, but it's also within project roadmaps. It's the entire product delivery process that now needs to be chunked down into smaller pieces. So it goes to the heart of your prioritization question. So if you, instead of having 3 months to come up with a detailed requirements document that covers who all the target markets are, who all the competing personas might be, what all the scenarios might be that those personas will find themselves in, and then the requirements that you need to consider. Instead of that, we actually have 2 weeks to come up with the best first cut of that set of requirements that we can within a 2 week time frame. And what that causes, what the output of that is either sheer panic, which is a starting point. After you've gotten over the panic, you then start prioritizing. So if you have a number of different personas you could be considering, you need to identify who is your most important persona. If that persona has a number of different tasks or overall scenarios that you're considering, you need to work out what is the most important scenario or kind of user journey that you need to consider for that persona. And then start only working on the most important persona for the most important scenarios and for the most important tasks within those scenarios. And as you start to chunk that down, you're deliberately leaving behind a lot of other activities, a lot of other personas, a lot of other scenarios that you could be developing, but you're not developing to begin with. You then come back to them in subsequent iterations.
So we're getting pretty granular. Should we come back out to the second question, or have
sure.
we covered it? Which is Q2, where do you see this agile business gap being a problem? We're essentially speaking to it.
Yeah, and like I said before, when in smaller teams where the team can essentially fit around a dining table, you can discuss the product vision, you can adapt to different personas, you can adapt to different scenarios you want to think about, and that product vision can be easily articulated within that small team. But in large organizations of hundreds or even thousands of people, the ability to keep that vision clear from all the way through the project can be quite challenging. And the deeper you get into the detail, the harder it is sometimes to sort of pop back up a level to understand what the overall business problem is. And so this is where we need to have, this is where the role of the product manager is absolutely vital. And by extension, the role of the product owner is the representative with an agile team. Because they essentially are the gatekeepers or the shepherds of that vision for the product, and need to balance out both the high-level vision as well as the detailed view of what the product will actually deliver.
Hold on. I'm tweeting this out. It must balance the high-level and the specifics. Okay, so I want to welcome Jason C. Davis and Healthcare Wen, who are tweeting, as well as Irina Kramer, who asks, how do you align agile and traditional waterfall methodologies in one project, since vendors use both? And actually, that's I'm looking to see, do we have that as a question?
Not specifically, but that kind of goes to the heart of this challenge. And what we just described is that, in fact, to me, that is the agile business gap. That we have organizations which are focused around a waterfall environment throughout their organization, which actually works pretty well up to the point of delivery. And then we have an agile team which is chipping away at product functionality and expecting to deliver it in small chunks. But in large organizations, that waterfall environment just doesn't work to deliver sort of this hybrid of an agile process and a waterfall process. So by kind of exploring that gap between, at the very least, between the business case and the agile development team, we can, and applying some of the agile principles of time boxing and iterations, we're trying to develop a solution that closes that agile business gap.
And so it's not an easy thing to do.
No, not at all.
And, I think it's a big enough issue for product managers who are working in a large organization. And I see a lot of, if there is a product marketing person, their role is keeping the narrative of the product and delivering that narrative across all of the organizations and keeping that vision and that communication happening cross-functionally. But that's just one piece of it. How do product managers learn how to apply these agile principles appropriately into the organization?
I think the first step is kind of counterintuitive for the product manager, and that is to embrace good enough, to embrace imperfect. A lot of the time, the product managers that I've worked with tend to be perfectionists. They like to make sure that every T has been crossed and every I has been dotted. But when you're working in a a time box constrained environment, we have to move to a situation where not only is the product manager more accepting of something that's partially completed or has been pulled together knowingly within just a two-week period and is therefore going to be somewhat complete but not entirely complete. But the rest of the business needs to start embracing that output as well. So if the in the larger organisations, if the teams that are receiving a product management's output that's been delivered in a two-week period says, what's this rubbish? This isn't finished. Then the idea of good enough or partly done starts to fall apart. And so an entire sort of workflow needs to be considerate of the fact that that a persona might be sketched out rather than heavily detailed, that the entire user journey may not be fully mapped out, that only parts of it might be detailed, and that that's okay with the understanding that more will be coming with more detail in the future.
And I also see it as a challenge to embrace the good enough and allow an imperfect release within this time box constraints. You know, it's also a challenge for if there's quality assurance or if there's technical documentation. They're focused on the full product or bigger pieces of the product. So is it dis enabling them to do their jobs? Or how do you bring all the other functions into this process?
Well, I think it's kind of as this is being rolled out in an organization, as you sort of expand time box and iterations to other parts of the business, they're the questions that need to be asked. So for each group, how much can you get done in a two-week period? How can we align those? And I'm just using 2 weeks as an example for a particular iteration. What can be done in a two-week period, and how can we try and make sure that from an overall workflow that enough is being input, enough is being output, that you can actually start piecing pieces together to deliver something to the marketplace. We've also made a sort of a very clear distinction between a minimum viable product and a minimum marketable product within the larger organizational context that might help answer that. Sorry, I must apologize for background noise. I was unfortunately locked out of my office, and I'm in a cafe, which is becoming increasingly busy despite the fact that I'm at the furthest reaches of the space.
Okay, it's all good, Nick.
Okay, good. I've just thrown my train of thought.
We're talking about the distinctions between the minimal viable product and the minimal marketable product, and I just saw a blog posting talking about the minimal delightful product.
Well, I think the distinction between those two, the MVP and the MMP, is that a minimum viable product is essentially the minimum thing you can present to the marketplace, to a customer, to test some aspect of the product, to test some assumption that you had as an unknown that you're trying to turn into a known. That might be a business assumption, it might be a technology assumption, it might even be a market assumption where you're trying to find out whether there's actually a customer out there. But it's not necessarily a scalable, releasable product to the market that you'd present to a larger marketplace of existing customers. By contrast, the minimum marketable product is the minimum product that you can take to the marketplace that can scale, that can compete against other alternative solutions, and has some differentiating factor that you can use to actually market in the marketplace so that customers will actually buy it. And so those two things for a startup might be very, very similar, but in a larger organization, the idea of releasing to the total market a minimum viable product, which is used really just for testing, is unthinkable because the damage that a poor experience might create might be far greater in terms of reputational damage than they can bear. And however, being able to test with a small pilot market or a stakeholder group or a small segment of their marketplace might be entirely acceptable.
This is very important. This is a very important distinction. The minimal viable product versus the minimal marketable product. I've not seen a lot written about it, although just recently David Lieb wrote about cognitive overhead, where he was talking about minimal features. So more from a design thinking point of view than from a build and release point of view.
Yeah, and the two are quite related. In terms of the minimum, you know, a product is defined by its features, but those features are defined by the problems that they solve in the marketplace. And if you have, and this goes right back to your business case thinking, there will be nice to have features because there are additional problems you may want to solve. But if you start pruning back your product, you'll find that there is a minimum set of problems that you set out to achieve a solution to. And that essentially is the minimum marketable product that you're willing to take to the marketplace. You may have paper prototypes or clay mock-ups or support scripts that might represent components of a minimum viable product to test assumptions. But none of those things on their own would be releasable to a large marketplace.
Great. So I just want to give a shout out. If you're listening to the Global Product Management Talk, we are live on Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/prodmgmttalk. You are welcome to call in to 323-927-2957 to listen live. As well as to join the discussion with my guest speaker, who is Nick Koster, at Nick Koster, who is co-founder of BrainMates. We are discussing the gap between business case and agile development process. So we're on to, question three, which, again, we've been addressing. Is there a way of closing the agile business gap in larger business organizations with ease? Is there a way of closing it with ease? It seems to me it requires some training and some alignment of the different functions to come together to align on not only what is the process here, but what is the intention, and or even to agree on how are you defining what the minimal viable product is versus the minimal marketable product. And would you have to get sign-off to get everyone to agree?
So as you can see in my answer, the short answer is yes, I think there is a way of closing this gap. And it requires not so much a process change, but almost a discipline and an attitude change that business accepts. So when we look at this, the process for us and sort of our approach, we have our own product management framework that we adhere to, which starts off with an idea, develops out a business case, immerses itself in the customer problem before we start delivering a solution. So the first key point around closing this business gap is making sure that we are clearly articulating the problem we're trying to solve in the marketplace and the different parts of that problem in the marketplace before we start thinking about the solution. An agile development process is very, very good at exploring, testing and iterating on different solution ideas. What it shouldn't be used for is exploring new problems, because that just results in scope creep. So the problem thinking has to come before the solution thinking in the agile development team. The second aspect that needs to be considered
I totally agree. Problem thinking must precede the solution thinking, but in organizations where the engineers they're technology driven, they're always looking at the problem and then justifying with the market.
And I think, look, in those environments, this is where when I think about a best practice product management approach, or at least a good practice product management approach, organizations that are driven by their technology will on average fail. The ones that succeed, we all know and love. The ones that fail, the myriad of ones that have failed, we never hear about. The ones that have become customer-centric and solve interesting problems in the marketplace are essentially the market leaders. And so what we see is if you're able to describe a valuable market problem and you're able to identify a solution to that market problem, then you have a business opportunity. If you've simply created a solution and you're going in search for a problem, well, then you're more or less gambling with your resources. And they're quite different propositions. So I think for those tech-driven organizations, some of them innately know what their problems are they're trying to solve but don't explicitly state it. And again, in smaller organizations, you can get away with that because your vision is close enough to the development coalface. But in larger organizations, if you have a technology team which is just building stuff, then chances are you'll be building a lot of stuff before your investments turn out to be good ones. So if instead an organization focuses on problem thinking first, it's almost like cheating. If you can find valuable problems in the marketplace that nobody else is addressing, or you think you can deliver a solution to more effectively, cheaper, more efficiently, or for more ease for the customer, then you'll almost certainly be successful in the marketplace. The second attribute that is necessary for this business gap to be closed is that the product manager needs to deliver less stuff but more frequently. So as I mentioned a little bit earlier, instead of having, if there are three market segments that a business is trying to satisfy, the product manager needs to focus on just one of those market segments first. It needs to do as much as it can within a finite time period of an iteration or one or two iteration cycles to come up with the best research, the best description of that target market before saying, you know what, it's enough. It may not be perfect, but it's as good as we can get in the time frame. And then moving on to the next stage. And as part of that process, as part of that time boxing and iteration process, the product manager will be constantly prioritizing their outputs to maximize business and market value. And that's kind of the third element of the Agile process, which I absolutely love, which embraces the idea of, if we can only deliver one thing, what's the one thing that will deliver the most value to the marketplace, and how can we make sure that's done first? And makes it a much better solution delivery system relative to a waterfall process where you're trying to deliver everything at once, whether or not it's valuable. And so we're simply moving that thinking further and further up the development path.
Great. I want to welcome David Morris and also Sue Bassanis, who are out here tweeting and listening. So it's all about value. If you can only deliver one thing, guarantee that is going to encompass the most value you can, and focus on delivering less more often.
Absolutely. And that concept of value it's fundamental to the Agile philosophy, and it should be fundamental to business as well. If it might be that you need to deliver something which is not technically perfect, which is not technically wonderful, and to deliver it to less people and exclude some people from your marketplace. But if you've identified a particular market segment who you think has a key screaming pain point in the marketplace and you can solve that for them, and you've provided them a way to exchange value with the business, then you've created an opportunity to profit, essentially, by delivering that maximum value as early as possible in the process.
So are you suggesting instead of going after a big market, go after a small market segment, delight them, deliver value, and then grow upon that?
Potentially, if that's the way you're starting up a business, but you may have a large market who is extremely valuable to the business that you want to continue to delight or continue to deliver value to. So in larger organizations, again, they have existing products. So the quest is to work out what's the most important thing that we can add to our product, fix with our product, remove and replace as part of our product for that target segment. So it's not necessarily about picking the biggest or the smallest, but it's trying to find the combination of the most people with the most pain point, or the most important pain point that if we delivered a solution to them would most benefit and deliver a business benefit to the organization. So it's kind of trying to find that almost that perfect storm of things. And even if there's not a large market, when you're prioritizing, you're essentially saying, is this group more important than this group? Is their pain point more important than the other group's pain point? And constantly picking one priority over the next. And I think that's another element where the agile approach to creating a product backlog is quite powerful, because there can be no two priority ones. There is a one thing on the top of the product backlog, then there's a second thing in the product backlog, and the third thing, you can't rank more than one thing as the number one priority, which quite often happens when you're going through a business case. The business stakeholders will say everything is a priority, and so we have to deliver everything, and that essentially doesn't work in this environment. So we're forcing a clear prioritization process across every element of the problem definition stage, as well as the solution design stage.
I think a training in distinctions would be key. How do you identify what is the most important? Or, you know what, you have to be willing to make mistakes. And if you're going to be releasing on a regular basis, then there's the thing. You have to build in the permission to, this might not be the right one that we're releasing.
Absolutely.
This might not be the most value that we're seeking, but we're going to learn from this.
That's right. So in the context of that minimum viable product, some of the earliest tests that you may want to try and validate is, if you've assumed that a particular market segment is your most valuable customer, then part of that first assumption might be to create a product or a mock-up or a prototype that is just barely sufficient to be able to take to that market segment and ask them an appropriate question. Like, you know, do you have this problem? Would this product solve it? Before you start actually building out everything else. So you're taking that iteration and that customer feedback process further up the product design thinking into problem analysis as well as solution.
Into problem analysis as well as solution?
Solution design.
As well as solution design. There you go. I just want to shout out to you. Welcome Andy Fields at Pain Point. Welcome BCAF Design. They are tweeting and retweeting some key points out here. So, again, you are answering essentially Q4. What do product managers actually have to do to bridge the agile business gap? I'm totally operating on good enough and not capturing all the value into the tweets, because you're talking very fast and there's quite a rich amount of information that you're discussing here, Nick. And it's new information to me, certainly. I've not seen this so succinctly put of how to. I've seen it in theory, but not in a step-by-step way to do this. So,
well, it's certainly been, I mean, at BrainMates we run, I'm the lead trainer for our product management training, where we essentially train the fundamentals of product management, which covers a day-to-day product management and a delivery cycle. And we also train people in agile methodologies. But where we've seen this gap is, well, how do we mix these two things together? And so that's really sparked, you know, a challenge for us as to come up with a solution to that particular problem. How do our customers, the product managers, find a solution to this? So we've been thinking about this for quite some time. And this is where we've really seen that there isn't anything that's functionally different to the approach that product managers are currently involved in, which is, you know, making sure you know who your customers are and you've defined them, identifying what they're, you know, a storyboard essentially, or scenarios, or user story writing approach to work out what their requirements will be. All we've tried to do is work out how do we then create an iteration cycle for that within a finite time window so that we that then works with and has a similar cadence or a similar rhythm to the agile iteration approach.
Right. That makes total sense and seems like it would increase efficiency and make it, I don't know, it seems like the challenge would be bigger at the beginning for product managers, but once the hurdle is crossed, it would make it better. But it seems like there needs to be some deconstruction first to current processes.
Yep. So the kind of the outputs we're kind of thinking about are, instead of a detailed, you know, let's say, for argument's sake, a 100-page requirements document, there might be a couple of pages or some very lightweight persona descriptions, a graphical storyboard on a wall that people have talked about, and then maybe a couple of pages of requirements or a fistful of user stories that are completed in a short time window. Then as they get fed into a product backlog for development and solution discovery and release, the next chunk of stuff is looked at by the product manager. What other scenarios haven't been considered yet? What are the other most important pain points that need to be worked on by the product manager and the user experience teams and the rest of the business as we sort of collaborate together to work out what those experiences might be? And as early as possible, test those assumptions with the marketplace.
Excellent. So I want to skip the next question that we talked about was how does business start closing the agile business gap? And I think you've been addressing that. So let's go into the barriers that you see in being able to close the gap.
And there's cool. This is where I get to have a rant.
Okay. Go ahead.
So look, I think some of the key barriers that we've observed, the very first one, which happens when a development team says we're going agile team, is this concept of the product owner. Now, in a business, the product owner is quite often a fairly senior role within a product management team. But this is a term which has been essentially hijacked by the agile methodology to be a very specific role within an agile team. And so from a developer standpoint, this product owner is the most important sort of person in the development team from the product's perspective, but it's actually quite a tactical role within the overall organization because that role is essentially feeding in information and strategic decisions that have already been made. And so the tension around the definition of who is the product owner is a real challenge for an agile team. The other aspect of it is that when a team goes agile, there's this presumption that a product owner will materialize in front of them. When in fact when that role doesn't actually appear, the development team then say, well, you're the product manager, you should perform the role of the product owner. And as anyone who I'm assuming listens to this podcast this chat, we know that the product manager is actually kind of busy doing a whole bunch of other stuff to then have this Scrum product owner role then thrust upon them as well. And so kind of the analogy that I was thinking about as we were sort of putting this together, it's a little bit like asking the coach of a soccer game to suddenly step in and play goalkeeper while they're still coaching. To turn a strategic role into a tactical role. Just because there's a team member missing from the team doesn't mean that you then bring in the coach for the team. You actually need to replace it with a team member who's skilled in the role of either goalkeeping or, in this case, the product owner role, which is a very important role in that team.
Thank you. But that really speaks to, you know, defining what product management is. And certainly we're aligned in seeing it as being a strategic position and function, but not all organizations are. Young organizations, they only have one role. It's product manager. Do everything that isn't development. I see that a lot in startups, and they're not even brought in until there's 10 or 25 developers already in place because they feel like they can manage themselves. But as you said earlier, they're very close to the vision. They're aligned with the vision.
That's right.
They don't see dysfunction until it's a much bigger organization.
And what we found in terms of the role of product manager, that role, that person or people within with that title of product manager, often have very, very different job functions. Yet the function of product management exists in every organization, whether or not there's a product manager in that organization. So product management is being done throughout the team. But the representative of that product management organizational function, who is the kind of the product owner in an agile team, quite often isn't resourced at all.
Gosh, Nick, we're coming to the end of the hour.
I'm running out of complaints.
Well, actually, you did pre-answer these for me, and I think you gave me at least three barriers to doing this effectively. And certainly,
yes,
we could spend an hour discussing this product owner versus product management dilemma.
Absolutely.
And we have approached it at various times before, so I say we should pick it up again aligned with this business agile gap because it's critical. And I think there's certain conversations that aren't ready to be had, and I think, you know, this conversation has arrived.
Definitely. I think there's a lot of, I mean, we're in the process of sort of fleshing out the what we're calling our practical agile for product managers course and sort of firming that up that really tries to embrace this agile gap. And some of the pain points that we're talking about today, hopefully we'll be able to address to some extent in that environment.
Yes. So, gosh, thank you, Nick, for joining us. And you can follow Nick at Nick Koster and also at BrainMates. And as he referenced, Brain Rants is the blog at brainmates.com. Check it out. There's excellent discussions. I expect that we will continue this discussion in a blog posting there. I want to thank our sponsors at AIPMM, at Sprintly, at BrainMates, at SponSumo, and also invite you to join us next week when Tristan Cromer at Trico, who is a lean startup coach, will be joining us to talk about how to create lean startup product teams, product management teams, and how to bring lean how to cross the lean startup, lean development gap with product management. Thank you so much, Nick, for joining us today.
My pleasure again.
I appreciate everyone around you. They were not a distraction at all. So.
Right.
And again, this was a late afternoon. We started off at this time because of broadcasting and other issues. We've gone to a regular 10 a.m. on Pacific time, but I will schedule again to bring in our colleagues in Australia. There's quite a few excellent product management people, including Adrian. So let's plan to not wait another year to have you back, Nick, and let's continue the conversation offline. Thanks so much for joining today.
Fantastic. Thank you, Cindy. It's been a pleasure.
Same here. So thank you to our sponsors. Again, thank you to Blame Sally for the music that will take us out. Thank you to BZ Lewis at Studio 132. And we will be back on next week, Monday, April 29th, at our regular time of 10 a.m. Pacific time. Follow us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK, and you will get reminders. Thanks to the tweeters. thanks to the Startup Product Talks community. And my heart is with my extended family in Boston and the surrounding area. And have a great week.